Let's get started here. I'm with Bill Foxer, the director of UT's Boyd Center for Business and Economic Research.
That's correct.
So let's start off. Before the Supreme Court ruling, what did the law require before states could collect taxes on internet purchases?
Well, there were two earlier Supreme Court rulings that basically established physical presence as a necessity to require a firm to collect your sales tax. So basically what it meant was Tennessee could only require a firm that had physical presence in Tennessee to collect its tax. Now, that did not mean a store necessarily. And so there has been all of this activity for the last 25 years as states have gotten more and more aggressive about what does physical presence mean. For example, if your company had inventories held in an Amazon warehouse, that probably established physical presence. And so you know, it was broader than just a store. Nonetheless, it did open up great opportunities for companies to plan where they created physical presence so they didn't have to collect sales tax for a whole range of states.
Am I correct in thinking that Phil Bredesen brokered a deal with Amazon in terms of state taxes?
Well, for sure, when Amazon first located here with its warehouses, we did not collect or did not require Amazon to collect the sales tax for Tennessee. Once Governor Haslam came in, he realized that we needed actually legislation on this. And so ultimately, there was an agreement reached where Amazon would send out emails to Tennessee consumers for three consecutive years, alerting them that they, in fact, owed the tax. Many people don't realize that if the company didn't collect it, you're supposed to pay it. So Amazon sends out these emails telling people that you may owe tax on the $117.42 worth of stuff you bought this past year. And then at the end of those 3 years, Amazon would begin to collect the tax for Tennessee. And so they did. I think that was 2014 or 15. I'm unsure off the top of my head which it was. But Amazon is now collecting for all states. But it's important to remember that less than half of Amazon sales are, in fact, made by the company Amazon. More than half are on the platform of Amazon. You may not realize that when you're buying. And many of those companies were not remitting the sales tax to Tennessee.
So what changes with the Supreme Court ruling?
Of course, you're talking to an economist about a legal ruling, so let's keep that in mind. But my reading of it is that the Supreme Court said, uh-oh, we made a mistake. They looked back at this 1992 case called the Quill case and said the court just ruled wrong. And I agreed with them. And by the way, I've been working on this issue for decades, and I said exactly that at the time. It was clear from the Quill case that it was a group of lawyers making this decision, not a group of economists, because I don't think it's the way economists would have reached. And now, with some time passing, the lawyers have come along and realized that change was really necessary, that when you create these kind of constraints in the economy where you require something like physical presence, companies can plan around that and do plan around it, and buyers plan around it. And that creates all kinds of distortions in how your economy works. And so, you know, fortunately, the court went and said, hey, that physical presence ruling, that's not a reasonable ruling. Now, they did remand this particular case, and it was a South Dakota case, back to the South Dakota Supreme Court to reach the final conclusion, but with the understanding that the Supreme Court no longer thinks physical presence is necessary. And they did go on to say that they thought South Dakota was very reasonable. I mean, there's some special characteristics. South Dakota has said, yeah, we expect remote firms to collect our sales tax, but only if they sell more than $100,000 into South Dakota or have 200 transactions. So first of all, there had to be substantial sales, not just an occasional sale, for that presence to be there. They also went on to say, we're not going to require payments from the past. We're not going to look backward, because you could have argued that these firms should always have been collecting the tax, and so then they could have been, you know, guilty of evasion and had to pay large damages. So they said we're not going to do that. And thirdly, South Dakota is a member of this association. It's called the Streamlined Sales Tax Project, and this is an association of 24 states that have simplified the sales tax. And so South Dakota has taken all the right steps in terms of making sure that the compliance burden for small vendors outside of South Dakota is not unusually large.
And going local, Knoxville in particular is working to make noise as a maker city. So that features a lot of small craft businesses. Does this mean anything to them? Do they need to be more vigilant about collecting online sales tax?
Well, they certainly might need to be. Now, we need to keep in mind that, the Supreme Court reached this decision a week ago. That didn't change very much the next day. Many states don't have legislation requiring remote vendors to pay because of, this Quill case. About 20 states had done something, including Tennessee, which had promulgated a regulation, but it was not going to come into play until the Supreme Court ruled. And so I'm not exactly sure where that stands and how long it will be. But we're not collecting yet in Tennessee for remote vendors. And this is true of most other states. So nobody has to panic. It will take states some time to decide how they're going to address this. Even South Dakota said, we're going to go back and see what this means to us. So that's first point. Secondly, this, again, is imposed on firms with some kind of a threshold. South Dakota's is $100,000. Now, if we think about that, if you're a national company selling just kind of evenly on a per capita basis across the country, that's a $40 million firm. Okay, $100,000 into South Dakota is a lot of money. Now, $100,000 to California, not so much, but it is to South Dakota. So again, if you're a really small local craftsman or woman and sitting here in Knoxville, Tennessee, odds are you only have to collect the sales tax for Tennessee. But if you're doing significant sales into Texas or California, then you may well have to begin to collect that sales tax. The good news, you don't really have to become a legal expert on the sales tax to do this. There is software out there that can be purchased or rented. Indeed, if you operate on the Amazon platform, Amazon will do it for you. Now, this is going to cost you something, but keep in mind, that local retailer that you're competing with is also having to comply with the sales tax. They're bearing those costs. And so yes, it does change the position. And as I would think of it, it levels the playing field. It puts everybody on the same basis where they have to pay the compliance costs and they have to collect the tax. And then the consumer can just do their business because, the sales tax is the same. And so there's no longer this subsidy to the remote vendor that's been in place.
Did the state go after people for individuals for state-owed taxes to online purchases before? Have there been cases of that?
Occasionally, that would happen. What's happened around the Southeast and in some other parts of the country as well is there's associations of tax administrators that work together. And so there might be some sharing of information between North Carolina and Tennessee or Kentucky and Tennessee or whomever. They're not always that public about this happening, but there's some sharing of information going on. And, if for example, you went to a furniture store over in North Carolina, purchased furniture, didn't take possession of it, actually you have it shipped to you, then you don't owe the North Carolina tax. But that store does have to tell North Carolina why it didn't collect the sales tax. Now North Carolina knows that you bought this furniture in Tennessee. They know where it was shipped to. They could provide that information to Tennessee. And so this kind of information sharing made it possible. Companies get audited. It's not just consumers that pay a sales tax. Companies often pay. For example, if you're a grocery store, you would be paying on the shelving in your store. You'd be paying on the bags that you're using for your goods and a bunch of stuff like that. And so they also could owe this tax on their transactions. And they are, while they're not frequently audited, they are audited. Yes, the state went after it, but I mean, let's be honest about it. There are 300 and some million of us in the U.S. Trying to collect this tax from us as individuals just made no sense. It makes a lot more sense to try to collect it at the vendor level. And hey, we do all other taxes this way. Let's keep this in mind. The individual income tax, most of our income tax payments are made through our employer, right? Now, we do file a return at the end of the year, but the money was by your employer. The Social Security tax is remitted by your employer if you work for somebody and so forth. So this is not unique to the sales tax. It's not special to the sales tax. It's a recognition that it's easier and more cost-effective for our economy if we have taxes collected by the vendor or our employer and not from each of us as individuals.
And estimates of taxes for the state that the state could make run around $200 million. Does that sound about right to you?
So this is tricky. And I'm cautioning everyone, particularly legislators and governors, to be very, very cautious when they think about these numbers. We are in the Boyd Center have worked for some years providing not revenue estimates, but cost estimates, how much we thought that states were losing. But that's different than saying this is what states are going to get from a particular piece of legislation, particularly a piece of legislation with a threshold in it. I mean, Tennessee's regulation, it has a $500,000 threshold. Now, again, if we think, okay, if a firm is selling on average across the U.S., that's about a $25 million firm selling into Tennessee. So there is a whole lot of vendors out there, or there are a whole lot of vendors, who are not likely to be required to collect our sales tax. And you and I as buyers could still shop around and find those. And so the notion that suddenly we're going to get all of this money, I think should be viewed with a big grain of salt. Will we get some money? Absolutely. But we need to be cautious on the amount, make sure the money is there before we build any tax policy around that money.
It's a relatively new ruling, and so basically a lot of this is we'll wait and see how it sort of shakes out.
That's certainly the case, and indeed, while this, again, has been talked about for decades, in the earlier Supreme Court decision in 1992, they said Congress needs to act on this. They were very clear about that. That hasn't changed. What we have now is a ruling that says this physical presence notion doesn't make sense in the economy of today. That I totally agree with. From there, the notion that Congress might get involved and help with ensuring that there are reasonable rules for a small firm or a modest-sized firm operating in Knoxville, Tennessee, as it sells in the 45 sales taxing states, that makes a lot of sense to me, with reasonable and consistent thresholds. And indeed, ultimately, maybe no threshold, but today we need to make sure that we bring this system in with you know, appropriate patience. And so I think there's still a big role if Congress is willing to step up here. So yeah, no need to panic, no need to overreact, but you know, local vendors need to be aware they may soon be expected to collect the sales tax. There are 44 other states and the District of Columbia that if they're selling across the country, they may be expected to comply with their sales tax.
Well, we shall wait and see. Bill Fox, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Victor.